Welcome to Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag. This is Las Vegas Weekly Managing Editor Spencer Patterson. This week's print issue features the Weekly's annual What We're Thankful For guide, touching on everything from the Double Down Saloon to the chicken fingers at Crown and Anchor. The cover subject? Guard Anthony Marshall of the UNLV Running Rebels, with a basketball in one hand and a turkey leg in the other. So we figured, who better to join us on this week's show than Sun Sports Editor Ray Brewer to tell us how the Rebels are looking from press row. As we tape this show on Tuesday night, he's actually at the Thomas and Mack Center, getting ready for tonight's game against Cal Poly. Ray, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it, Spencer. Always love being on with you, brother.
So UNLV is 4-0 heading into this game tonight. I know it's early, but how excited should Rebel fans be at this point in the season?
Well, that's a real catch-22 because, one, the fans are so hungry for a winner, and the team has delivered on its promise to be a running team and an exciting team. They're 4-0. They've scored more than 90 points the last two games. But you got to look at the competition, the schedule.
Right.
You know, Morgan State, Canisius, Grand Canyon, not exactly world beaters. So, yeah, there's a reason to be excited, but if we talk again next week, we'll know for sure how excited we should be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, next weekend or this coming weekend, they've got USC on Thursday, and then North or South Carolina on Friday, depending what happens. I mean, that seems like more of a barometer where people will know what they've got here, right?
Yeah, and the USC game is, in my opinion, the most important game of the season because USC is not a good team by any stretch of the imagination. But if UNLV can beat USC, they'll likely play Carolina in that tournament. Carolina, Spencer, ranked number one in the nation.
Right.
All the McDonald's All-Americans. You know, UNLV's got guys that eat at McDonald's. North Carolina's got guys that are McDonald's All-Americans.
Right.
And just to have a chance to play Carolina, to prove themselves, the game will be on ESPN2. You know Tark will be there. The announcers are old tie, the old to the new with Coach Rice. It'll be a free ad for UNLV basketball.
So you think just getting there really is the key, just getting that exposure and people kind of rediscovering the Rebels this year who may not have followed what's been going on.
Yeah, exactly, because as we've seen in the first four games, there's a lot of good players on the team, and they're doing some exciting things. And I'm not saying just get to the game to Carolina and lose by 30 points like the football team did to Wisconsin. You know, go there, be competitive, get yourself some moral victories. But just having the opportunity to have that stage so early in the season when UNLV's in some recruiting wars for some good players, I think is pretty invaluable, man.
How much of a difference are you actually seeing on the floor as far as coaching styles from Lon Kruger's team to Dave Rice's team now?
Well, Lon Kruger's team, first of all, played great, aggressive, hard defense, and that's carried over with Coach Rice. The kids are determined defensively to create turnovers and to create offense off the defense. And Coach Rice himself probably says after every game at the press conference, give credit to Coach Kruger for getting these guys to think defense first. Offensively, they are push the ball in transition every play of the game, no question about it. Last year, it was push the ball when you had a good opportunity. If not, bring it around. Let's find ourselves a good shot. And that in transition, what they've done is they've just outran everybody. They're getting open looks, good shots, because they're beating teams down the court. It's been a great formula for success. But I will tell you, against Nevada Reno, they were up 14 with 7 minutes to go, and they ended up squandering the lead because the press go-fast offense isn't conducive to kind of wearing out the clock. And if the other team could hit a few shots like Reno did, you could get in trouble.
Right, and against the better teams, I mean, turnovers could be a problem with that style of offense, right?
Yeah, I mean, just against the better teams that probably, Spencer, have the athletes to balance UNLV. Right now, the offenses look so good because the competition's been so bad. It's, you know, like when you go to the rec center and you go to a gym and you're playing guys that are up to your speed, and then you get the one guy who's come that's played a little JC basketball and he just outruns you like he's in an NBA mix video.
Right, right. We're talking to Ray Brewer, sports editor for the Las Vegas Sun. So I guess let's talk strengths and weaknesses here. I mean, what do you see that the Rebels are doing really well so far?
Well, I think it's just a matter of it's the transition game. Aggressive on defense leads to aggressive on offense. and just always playing at a fast pace and being unselfish. 75% of their baskets have come through an assist. That wow. means nobody's out there creating their own shot, being selfish, being a ball hog. This team's always looking to get everybody involved. They're genuinely happy when somebody has some success. And I think just that whole team-first attitude, let's make sure everybody touches the rock, is going to have huge dividends later in the season because, you know, naturally they're getting to play a lot of people because they're winning by 30 points.
Right.
But when the games get a little more competitive, they're going to have to tighten up the bench and give less players some minutes. And I think that team-first attitude that we've seen through the assist that, I think makes a lot of difference. And if you're talking strength, Mike Moser, who was the Mountain West Player of the Week last week, leads the nations in rebounds, Spencer. His first game, he had 20 rebounds, which was the first time a UNLV player had had 20 rebounds since 2005. The guy's just dynamic. He's electric. He threw a dunk down the other night, and I thought, honest to God, I thought I was back in the 90s when that thing went down. The arena went crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he sat out last season after transferring, and now he really looks like the real deal, right?
Yeah, and he's a guy that I don't know if he would have had this much success playing for Long Kruger because he's a power forward that could face the basket and get his points, but he can also turn away and get his points, and he's just great in transition. There's oftentimes he gets a rebound or a steal, and he's the one bringing the ball up the court leading the fast break, and you know, usually you see a 6'8 guy running the court, and you're like, oh, big fella, give it to one of the smaller guys.
Sure.
Yeah, but with Moser, it's like, all right, let's see what you can do, man. And it's been fun to watch. He's definitely the most exciting player on the team, and he's had those highlight reel style plays you like to see.
Now, another exciting guy on the team, obviously, Anthony Marshall. We had him on our cover. You know, he's been with the program for a couple years now. What are you seeing and expecting from him this season?
Well, here's why I like Anthony Marshall on the Las Vegas Weekly cover. Because Anthony Marshall is a local Las Vegas player who is a top 50 recruit who picked to stay home and play at UNLV. And now he's the face of the team to the community. He's getting all kinds of publicity and all kinds of love. And that's what you get if you stay here. And if the coaches could relay through Anthony Marshall to some of these other kids that if you stay here, good things will happen. You covered Preps. Gorman's mm-hmm. a top 10 team. Finley Preps a top 10 team. There's a lot of big blue chip, multi star guys on those rosters. And if Anthony Marshall has success, which he's doing, then these guys will say, "Well, hey, maybe I can stay home at UNLV and be the man."
Right, right. And it looks like he's off to a pretty decent start. I saw the other night he had, you know, I think 8 assists in a game, 13 points, and a few steals.
Yeah, I think he's 11th nationally in assists at 7.3 per game, if I remember correctly from my preview. And last year, Oscar Belfield was the point guard. Started mm-hmm. every game at point guard, and Anthony was the two. And that just didn't work out well for Anthony because he wasn't a great outside shooter. Now, he and Belfield are interchangeable. They can each play the one and the two. And Anthony having the ball and bringing it up the court and getting others involved, he's just added this whole new dimension to his game. Always been the most athletic guy on the team. Well, I guess second behind Moser now.
Right.
Always been a great defender, subpar shooter, great competitor, and now we know he's a passer. So Rice coming in, kind of switching the guards up a little bit, making them interchangeable, has just been great for Anthony Marshall.
Hey, you mentioned Oscar Belfield, other guys, Chase Stanback. There are other players back. It seems like this year's team has a lot of guys who saw considerable minutes in the past, and experience is probably going to be a key as the season wears on, right?
Exactly. Oscar Belfield is a starter. In his career, he's only not started like 7 games. The guy's hit the big shot. You know what to expect from him every night. He's a competitor. He's a distributor. He's not worried what his numbers look like. He truly wants to get other players involved. And that's exactly what you want from a guy running your team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Chase Stanback, here's a guy who last year I was vocal in saying the kid has got the talent. He's just not taking the ball to the rack. He would score 15 points a game, but he wouldn't go within 7 feet of the basket.
Right, it was all mid-range jump shots and maybe some three-pointers.
Yeah, and three-pointers. And then against Reno, I believe, the first time he touched the ball, went to the basket, made it and got fouled. And I was like, okay, well, this is the Chase Tambach we're going to see. That's a whole new dimension. Because I thought last year one of my big complaints with the offense was if they couldn't get anything in transition, it was like four guys sitting around the three-point arc trying to shoot a three-pointer. Mm-hmm. And you needed Tambach, who's your wing, your best player in terms of points scored. You needed him to do a little creating, but he was content just, you know, getting his feet set and let somebody drive and kick it to him. And if he's able to do some own creating this year, I think the sky's got to be the limit for that guy.
So, I mean, we've talked a lot about the depth of the team and how many guys there are back, and then they get another guy back in January after sitting out, right? Reggie Smith, who I've heard some good things about, and he could be another guy who could help out down the stretch.
Yeah, exactly. He's a transfer from Marquette. He'll become eligible at the end of the first semester, so December 17th. And the book on this guy is super quick, jumps out of the gym. He's got like a vertical of like 42. Wow. And so he's definitely got the skills and the talent. Now the question is, he's a point guard. Whose minutes is he going to take? Is he going to take minutes from Belfield, from Marshall, or from Justin Hawkins now, who is the second leading scorer on the team, who's also getting minutes at the one and the two? And you got to remember, well, he's got some real good credentials, and Reggie's really athletic. He still is a freshman with limited experience.
Right.
And at the guard position in college hoops, you and I know, brother, you got to have a Belfield and a Marshall, a senior and a junior that have been there, done that, enhances your chances to win. So at the most this year, I don't see Reggie Smith playing more than 12 to 15 minutes a game, even though he's going to be a great addition and sick athletically.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think you could take minutes from the other guys to get this guy on the court.
Right. It sounds like he'll be kind of a spark plug guy to plug in a little bit here and there.
Exactly.
How about, I mean, I know, again, it's early, but if you're looking around, is there anything that strikes you as, you know, kind of problematic, whether it's, you know, size or rebounding or whatever it might be?
Well, I mean, you really got to nitpick to find something wrong because they've been that good the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we'll know more if they get a chance to play North Carolina. But, you know, you got to go back to that Reno game where, you know, they led by as many as 18. They had it in the bag, and they just couldn't close the deal. And, you know, that comes with being a veteran team. And, you know, when you're running and gunning like UNLV is, you got to be able to slow the ball down a little bit, play a little four corners, and run some clock. And their inability to do that, just thinking that they could keep their foot on the gas pedal all night and blow them out, to me was a little bit of a red flag. Going to be interested to see how they do it in a game where maybe they're up by 10 with 5 or 6 to play. Are they going to go for the kill, or are they going to just try to run some clock, which is pretty much, you know, how it works in college hoops. You're up by 10 with 6 to play. You take the air out of the ball and let the other team travel.
How much of that do you think is just Rice coming from Tark's program? And in those days, they didn't have to pull it back. I mean, they could just go, and they had the athletes to do that.
His style is a lot like Tark's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tark had no problems putting people away. But, you know, this is a different era of basketball. The talent is spread out. When Tark coached, you know, the good players were on a handful of teams. You know, you'd have 3 or 4 good guys on 15 teams, and maybe another 30 teams had 1 or 1.5 good guys. Now each team's got 2 guys that could play, somebody that could light it up at all times. So I just think it's a different era. So there's going to have to be a different mindset. I would think that if Tark was even coaching now, he would find a way to – you can't just go and take a shot within 7 seconds when you're up by 8 with 3 to play or 4 to play.
Yeah.
It won't work.
That sounds crazy. So we've got about 30 seconds left. So I know, again, it's ridiculously early to be making predictions, but we're going to put you on the spot anyway. Maybe just what's kind of a realistic expectation for fans this year? I mean, you don't have to give us number of wins or how far they'll go, but just what do you think people can expect in the long term from this team?
Okay, well, first of all, it's not like Rice came in and inherited a garbage program. They've
sure.
been to the tournament 4 out of the last 5 years. They've won 3 games in the tournament in the last 5 years. And this year, the Mount West Conference is down. New Mexico, UNLV, the clear, you know, 1A and 1B teams. And New Mexico has already had 2 losses. They lost to New Mexico State. So realistically, and I know the fans are totally on board and they've got high expectations, but I realistically think they win the league rather convincingly. I think they've taken a 5 or 6 seed in the tournament, and I see them winning a tournament game. And I think that at the beginning of the year, I would have called myself far-fetched. I would have said my expectations are too high for Rice and that people should just calm down. But after seeing this team play and after kind of checking out some of the other scores in the league, I think they win this league in a landslide, and I think that they're going to have to get a high seed in the tournament.
That sounds great, Ray. Thanks a lot again for coming on here and sharing all your firsthand experience with the team. We always love having you on the show.
All right, brother. I always like seeing you in the office. Thank you so much.
Have fun tonight at the game.
All right, man. Be good.
Coming up in the second half of tonight's show, Weekly staff writer Aaron Ryan talks about a Jameson-soaked wild night in downtown Las Vegas.
Good evening. I'm Aaron Ryan, staff writer for Las Vegas Weekly, and I have here with me tonight the fabulous Kate Flanagan. That's the only Irish accent I'm going to bust out tonight because hers is the real deal and it's fantastic. She is the Jameson brand ambassador for Nevada, Arizona, and Colorado. She recently came across the ocean from the Emerald Isle to be here with us in Sin City, and we're so excited to have her here. And she also was my hostess the other night for a crazy whiskey-soaked adventure downtown. And I had not really explored the downtown area before, so it was a great immersion in one of the coolest parts of the city. And Kate, welcome to the show. Welcome to America and to Las Vegas.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm delighted you could join me on my little adventure as well with me last week.
Yes. And I did inform Kate that I am Irish way back in my lineage. My name is actually the ancient poetic name for Ireland.
Yeah.
But I did find that Kate could drink me under the table in the whiskey department the other night. And the whiskey that we were drinking is the favorite whiskey, not only in Ireland, but across the world, Jameson.
Yeah.
So let's start by talking about why it's so delicious. And having put my nose in many glasses of it and tasted all of the different sort of flavors of Jameson, I can vouch it's awesome.
Yeah, there's a number of factors that make it so delicious, but the main one is the triple distillation. So the reason why John Jameson triple distilled his whiskey was to get that more refined, mellow flavor. And the most noticeable thing when you drink it is that it's so smooth. It doesn't burn on the way down, and it's such an enjoyable whiskey to drink either on the rocks, neat, or in a cocktail. So that's, the biggest attributing factor to its success. Another thing I think is the heritage, the story behind the brand. John Jameson set up the distillery in 1780. He was actually a Scotsman.
Which is shocking to most people.
A lot of people think he's an Irish gent, but he moved to Ireland in 1780 to set up this distillery, and it was no mean feat to set up a distillery at that time, because there was a lot of distilleries in Ireland, and that's where the whiskey making process all began. A Scots person will tell you different, but it all began in Ireland.
And one of the things I love that you told me about him was that not only was he a total stickler for detail, so the quality of the liquor was there, but he was a really fun person, someone who really loved to be at the distillery among his people and those who were helping to make the whiskey. And there was a gunpowder test.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what it was just to check the proof of the whiskey. And I know when they would test the whiskey with the gunpowder and it would create a bang, that's when they could not sell it because it was just a little bit overproof. Right. But when all the distillers and coopers in the distillery would hear that bang, they would go wild because they knew, right, party tonight. So they were the ones who drank it. So John Jameson was an extremely inclusive man, great sense of fun about him, he was really loved in Middleton. So that whole attitude behind the brand, that energy and that inclusive kind of attitude is still there today, and that's why people really enjoy drinking it as well, because it brings people together, they want to have a good time, and it's a serious whiskey that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Very good. And indeed, many people enjoyed it the other night. Mm-hmm. You had a bartender's ball and more than 1,000 people were there. Yeah. What happened?
Okay, well, we had a bartender's ball in Las Vegas. And the reason that we have these particular events is essentially just to give back and show appreciation and thanks for the guys that are selling our product. Mm-hmm. And as far as we're concerned, the bartenders in Las Vegas, you know, they're the most influential people here. So it was a night on us, a night on John Jameson. And we had it in Surrender Nightclub in the Encore. And there was, I think, 1,350 attendees. So to date, the biggest bartender's ball in all of the states.
Oh my
so
God.
So I was quite happy that I was involved in that, so I can say to all the other brand ambassadors across the states that I beat them.
And you're known as the Jameson girl, you know, kind of unofficially, right?
Yeah, I walk into a bar and I'm like, Kate, the Jameson girl.
And that occasionally involves, you know, challenging people to shot races, which we engaged in, and buying a round for the bar so people can try the whiskey and enjoy. Yeah. But what does a brand ambassador do? You know, obviously you're sort of the face of the brand. You're the person representing everything that it is. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have to party for a living, you know?
Yeah, well, it's more so about, I think, being the eyes and ears on the ground. So everything that's happening in here in Vegas, I'm reporting back to Ireland, although it seems very, very far away. I'm sending it all back. And, you know, they love to hear about the success of Jameson here. They love to hear about these little stories and these little downtown dive bars where, you know, they have every single one of our higher marks, our 12, our gold, our 18, our rarest vintage. And they love hearing that. So that's my role here. And it's also about, you know, mentoring and educating. So as you said, I would, you know, go to a bar and buy a round of shots for people. But it's not just, you know, to do a shot. It's more for them to sample it, to tell them, you know, what gives the whiskey its complexity and things like that. And just, you know, to get to know our consumers.
Absolutely. Mm. And you said that it's huge, obviously, in the U.S. I think there were double digit percentages of growth in all 50 states.
Yes.
You also said it's really big in South Africa, where it's getting bigger there. Is there a sort of a place where Irish whiskey, you know, is the thing? Or is it just everywhere?
Oh, I feel it's world domination. We are everywhere.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And one thing that I am ashamed to admit, but I love bourbon, and I've always sort of thought of bourbon and whiskey kind of being interchangeable and not really differentiating between a bourbon from Kentucky or like Tennessee whiskey, mm-hmm. or a Scotch or an Irish whiskey, you know, or a Canadian whiskey. I never really thought about the difference in flavor and texture and, you know, the process, mm-hmm. of how they're made. And that was one of the great things about hanging out with you the other night, is even though we were drinking and having fun, I was learning all this stuff about, you know, a spirit that I thought I understood pretty well,
yeah.
you know, and it was funny to taste the difference, you know, the things that were the same about what I liked, the richness, the kind of like caramel chocolate, you know, the deep flavor that I love about bourbon. I taste some of that in the Jameson, but it has its own thing going.
Yeah.
And the next day, I have to say, I mean, I had some beautiful cocktails. I had some straight whiskey. I should have probably felt a little bad, and I actually felt fantastic. I woke up the next day, went for a 4-mile run, and I was like, I can see how this is possible for Kate to, like, you know, go out and taste and do all this stuff and still, like, be able to walk.
Yeah. That's kind of the more pure, refined alcohol that we get through the triple distillation. So that's why you feel so fantastic the next day.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. And so for tastings, how do you sort of instruct someone on how to taste a Jameson whiskey?
Well, I definitely ask them to, you know, swirl the glass, which will open up the particular whiskey, and then just to take it on the nose initially. And that kind of just wakes up your senses a little bit. And, you know, initially you might not necessarily get, say, that toasted wood, muted tones of sherry coming through, but it just wakes up those senses. Also, you know, you definitely can add a drop of water to that whiskey too, just to break it down, bring out some aromas, bring out some flavors that you wouldn't necessarily get when it's neat, mm-hmm. And then take it, taste it in your mouth and like swirl it around a little bit and then swallow. And then your taste buds, they go on fire.
And that was one of the things I was surprised by when we were talking about Ireland and its reputation, obviously, for those, quote, lovable drunks, as you said. And you said that often, you know, shots are not the thing. You actually sip the whiskey and enjoy it in a different way. And that here in the States, and particularly in Vegas, you know, it's like its own sort of unique thing. And so you've learned to sort of enjoy it in a different way.
But I mean, I most definitely do prefer to drink my whiskey neat or in a cocktail and enjoy the whole experience. The shot culture isn't as big at home, so it was kind of a bit of a shock to the system when I got here, but it's an extremely easy and smooth whiskey to shoot, so
speaking of the shock to the system, what has it been like for you? I know you came to the States once before for a few months, but you've moved your entire life, you know, from one continent to another and have thrown yourself into this really exciting and fun job.
Yeah.
But, you know, what has it been like for you to go from there to here?
It is phenomenal. I mean, it is a shock to the system to move from the green emerald of Ireland to the desert. But I am having the time of my life. The brand is doing so well here. It's so popular. And for me to, you know, experience that with other people, and people are getting excited about it here as well. It's just such a great experience, and then I'm definitely embracing all the weird and wonderful things that Las Vegas has to offer. Definitely appreciate all that too. I love it. I feel like I'm taken to it like a duck to water. So,
and we should probably discuss your recent favorite cocktail, which is that Downtown Cocktail Room. It is the creation of the very gifted Rustin Lee. It's called the Harlot Night, and it's like this spicy, sweet but not overly sweet, very spirit forward cocktail that lets you taste the Jameson but also just be wrapped up in this most delicious cherry, like it's awesome.
It is the holidays in a cocktail.
It's the holidays, it's in a glass.
It's got that cinnamon stick to it, and then you get that the sherry kind of flavors of the Jameson coming through, and it really complements the whole cocktail. He's a genius.
what happened there? Did you just walk in and say like, hi, I'm the Jameson girl, make me a drink? Or like,
I just said to him, I go, I would like any cocktail with Jameson in it. I just want to see what you can do. And he just, he literally made it up there on the spot. And
no way.
It was phenomenal. There was no tweaking in it. He was like, you know, could I do a little bit of less of this, a little bit more of that? And I was like, no, you nailed it. So I definitely would encourage people to go on to the Las Vegas Weekly, see it, and then pop into the Downtown Cocktail Room and have it.
Absolutely. And also,
tell Rustin we sent him.
Yes. And he has a great mustache, by the way. Not every man can wear a mustache, but he can. Also online in the story, you can link to Kate's brand ambassador page, which is great. And you can find out a lot more about the events that she's hosting, where you can go and taste, see photos of her running around and doing fun things.
Yeah, we'll have like photos of different events, like say, for example, the Bartender's Ball. We'll have those uploaded onto the Facebook. Consumer tastings as well. I know people, you know, they know the Jameson Original, but they have never tried the 12-year-old, the Gold, our higher marks. So, you know, I have consumer tastings that are going to be hosted across the city. So they should, you know, log on, see where the next one is, and come down. Try it all.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I obviously have heard of Jameson. I had no idea that there were. Are there five different marks in the brand? Or?
Yes, we've got our Jameson Original, our Gold, our 12-year-old, our 18, and the rarest vintage. So there's five in total for the higher marks.
And each has its own thing to recommend it. And I know a lot of the flavors come from the casks that they're, you know, aged in. And my favorite was the Gold, which you, when you first described to me, had a creamy mouthfeel. And I thought, oh yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's the one.
And it definitely was. So I will be probably purchasing a bottle of that for the holidays, I think. I think it's sort of the perfect holiday flavor. Mm-hmm. Although it's a year-round thing, obviously. St. Patty's is huge. In the springtime, it's the only thing people want to talk about drinking other than green beer. But yeah, what are you going to be up to for St. Patty's?
Oh, I think I'll be all over Las Vegas. You know, we have to show everyone some love. So we'll be probably doing a bar crawl. And obviously drinking a lot of Jameson.
And the crawling might be literal, just to warn you. Well, Kate, thank you so much for being here with us tonight. This has been Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'd like to thank our producer, Steven Zeller, and his bad tattoo. and I'm Erin Ryan. We'll see you next week.